Welcome everybody to The Bottom Line. Exciting episode. Very, very interesting guest today. It's good to be with somebody who's been in the fight. But before we start, I just want to thank Glenn Story and the guys at Patriot Mobile. The guys and the gals at Patriot Mobile. Check them out. It's the only Christian conservative cell phone provider in the United States. And by the way, they use all the towers, T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T. Actually, you can switch in between the different providers to make sure you got the best coverage wherever you are. Check out Patriot Mobile. Dial 972-PATRIOT. Mention The Bottom Line. That's where you are. You'll get free activation. Or go to patriotmobile.com/thebottomline. That way you help us also save children from trafficking, but get really good cell phone service. If you're a serviceman or woman, God bless you. Thank you for your service. You will get taken care of especially well. Jenna Quinn, welcome to The Bottom Line.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. You were in the parking lot as I came in sideways this morning. Golly, man, I'm fresh off the Israel press. But I'm excited to have you in studio and maybe take a bit of a different angle to your story as we do here at The Bottom Line. You know, get into some of the things you don't normally get to talk about. So
absolutely
appreciate you, appreciate the work you do. I think we'll get to Jenna's Law. We will get there, but I think that's probably what people most know about you.
That's true. That's very true.
But there's a lot more to you. So wife, mom, survivor, and then just other things that make you tick. So let's start at the beginning. Where were you born?
That's a good place to start, at the beginning. So that's kind of a funny story. I was born, and a lot of people don't know this, in El Paso, Texas.
Okay, on the border.
On the border, mm-hmm. Yes. My parents met at UTEP, University of Texas, El Paso. And my dad has a very large family. He's, got several siblings, and I still have several cousins that are there. But my mom is from Colorado. So I was born in El Paso. I still have family there. My grandmother's there. But we moved when I was 3 months old, so I didn't necessarily grow up there. But I was born there. Yeah. And it's a beautiful city. It's changed a lot from when I remember growing and spending summers there and visiting with family. We used to go and cross the border literally to Juarez.
Yeah.
Just during the day, we would go, and it was just a fun Sunday afternoon. We're little kids. My mom would take us by herself, and we would go to the market, and we'd go get the chiclets, and we'd buy all the fun things that you can get at the markets, and we would go for the day, no problems, and we'd come back through the border, and everything was fine. And so I'm glad I have those memories, because
it's
you wouldn't
not,
do that
not,
today.
No, it's not that today. We will be there. Today. Actually, we will be, I can't give dates, but we will be there before the end of the year. We'll be back in El Paso and other places. And it's not the same today.
It's not the same. I have a lot of family in law enforcement there and in Border Patrol specifically. And so they have some good intel on the things that are really happening, the things that are really going on there.
Yeah. It's a challenging environment, to say the least. We're busy with a project on the border, always related to trafficking and combating trafficking. But, trafficking is such a broad term. I'm going to jump around a little bit in this interview. So you're a Texas girl. Then it became Dallas, more kind of Frisco, Dallas, for Americans, Dallas, the greater Dallas, but there's so many cities. Frisco,
Plano, the Metroplex Prosper. Is so big, and it continues to grow.
Yeah. I think we're touching close to 8 million, I think, at the moment in the DFW area, and the pandemic definitely had a lot to do with that massive migration. But I want to jump around a little bit. This question may surprise you. And you didn't get any questions from me, that's how I do things.
Totally how, impromptu.
How, and you answer or don't answer, okay?
Sure.
How healthy are you today?
That's a beautiful question. Today, I am healthy in my body, I'm healthy in my soul, and I'm healthy in my spirit, and I'm healthy mentally. And I'm free, Yako. I'm free. And there's only one reason for that, and that's the power of God. I didn't used to be I used to be, you know, the enemy truly thought he had me for a time, for several years in my life. And now I get to take back territory in a healthy space. Mm-hmm. And so as a survivor of, you know, child sexual abuse, I used to be afraid of the dark. I had to have my closet light on when I slept. A lot of people don't know that about me either. And all the things that go along with that. But when you know the one who created the light,
yep,
you're not afraid of darkness yep. anymore.
Look, it's maybe a bold statement, but I'm going to take this interview places that, you know, and I'm going to apologize in advance. But I just, you know, I'm a quick study. And when we met, I really feel, and that's why I led with that question, how healthy are you? Because mm-hmm. I really feel like you are in a place where we can tackle some things that yes. typically we cannot. When my sister sat in that chair, and Ilonka is a sex trafficking survivor of being trafficked for 6 years, and it was just a absolutely horrific story, but then also the most beautiful story because her life is amazing.
Beautiful.
There's just some places you can't go, and because but we need to. And
yes,
so
yes.
there's a couple of things I want to touch on today. Okay, so it's going to feel a little all over the place, but it really is. I'm having the listener in mind mm-hmm. when I do this, because people don't process pain.
Yeah.
They do not talk about pain. Now in this culture, it's frowned upon to be an individual, to have an individual voice. It's groupthink. It's actually don't think. We'll right. think for you.
Yes. Yep.
We'll think for you. We'll tell you how woke you need to be. And actually, how about you just forfeit your ability to think? Yeah. And so but then when we start dealing with pain, now it's super dangerous, because what you internalize will mm-hmm. consume you. So how in the darkest hour, okay, of mm-hmm. your life, of a family member, repeatedly violating trust, privacy, sexuality, space, intimacy, trust, all of the above. What was pain like? How did you experience pain? Can you verbalize for us? And as you're verbalizing it, it's going to connect with listeners that are there today.
Yeah.
That are feeling that today. They're going to go, oh, okay, so she does actually understand me. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually maybe not alone. I'm maybe not the only one, as Satan is telling me, and no one will listen. So not how did you deal with it? How did you experience pain? How did it manifest? Physical, sure, but just talk to me about pain.
There are a lot of layers to pain, I've come to learn, and we've seen that, because there are many layers to healing as mm-hmm. well. And I think that in the same way, there's different layers to different types of pain. And so touching on different things, because there's a lot of different ways that a survivor will feel pain, especially when there is something called grooming involved, which I know you're very familiar with grooming. You teach on grooming. I teach on grooming.
Yep.
It happens in person. It happens online. And it happens in so many different ways. And so that was part of my story. The perpetrator was a textbook groomer. And what's very wicked about grooming is the fact that there is an established trusting relationship that yep. is first built.
Absolutely.
And if you think about, you know, how precious children are, how innocent children are, how vulnerable children are.
And impressionable.
And very yeah. impressionable. Yeah. But then, you know, you look at that and how precious that is. Then you have somebody that wants to come along and take advantage of that and wants to build upon that. So now we're talking upon building on something that is good. It is good to be trusting. It is good to be loving. It's good to have a tender heart towards others. You know, all yeah. the things that we are supposed to have and should have and should aim to have as a child. And when someone comes along and builds upon that with the intent of harm, with the intent of, perversion, that's layers and layers and layers and layers of pain. And especially for me, a lot of this happened in the faith environment. So then you have your natural, you know, wounds, your natural pain, your natural mental health, the betrayal, the isolation, the fear, the shame, the anxiety. But then I love that research now shows that there's also an impact to the spirit.
100%. I'll say today,
yeah,
don't lose your train of thought, please. But, you know, it's beyond a trifecta. The death blow to a lot is if the perpetrator who always builds, in my sister's case, it was a year,
yeah,
builds trust and builds foundation. That's why familial trafficking is the number one form, because the trust is already there.
Yeah.
If it's already a coach, again, you know, if it's mm-hmm. already... But if you can add a God component to it, and you can now manipulate faith and God in the child's eyes, and they literally use God, abuse God. So it's spiritual abuse.
Yeah.
That is extremely hard and rare to come back from. I mean, to have a functional relationship with God again. Because I mean, we recently had a survivor where and I can share her name because she loves her name to be shared, Savannah. They would read scripture to her,
mm-hmm.
the pimp, while men was actively abusing her.
Yeah.
And they would create that faith trauma bond,
mm-hmm.
and manipulate the word of God.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the movie, The Book of Eli, right? One understands the power of the book to set people free, and the other understands the power of the book to hold people captive if it's lied and twisted like Satan. And so we find that a lot now in the abuse environment.
Absolutely. And I would argue that it's probably the least talked about when we look at training, and when we look at education, and when we look at awareness, addressing that spiritual component. And look, you know, this is exactly why Jesus spoke his harshest words to those who would harm children. It's because he knew that it impacts their spirits.
Mm-hmm.
It's because he knew that.
Well, that's the ultimate corrupter, right? If you crush the spirit.
Yes.
You did a TED talk. I did a TED talk. In my TED talk, I start with that you can break a human being like you break a horse. And it's not the physical pain is painful. It's painful. I've had a lot of physical pain in my life. But the emotional trauma, the spiritual trauma, that kind of pain is so difficult to heal, because it's so difficult to talk about and to believe. So the pain element, did you experience pain as a mechanism to help you fight, or was pain a mechanism that actually held you from fighting? How did you, and I've had it different with different people that I've talked to. Some said, no, because I experienced this level of pain, and some of the pain you don't even know you're experiencing it because it's layered, but just pain in general, where would you categorize it in the moment of being, when you were still a victim?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, and when you are a victim, it brings you back to, I was a victim in that moment in time. Because people will ask me when I'm doing interviews or when I'm writing, it's like, why don't you ever say the word victim? I always say survivor.
Because you are a survivor.
Yes. And every survivor is, unless it's happening in that moment in time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't say I'm a victim of cancer. No. If you're in remission, you're a survivor.
Correct.
Of it.
Correct.
Yeah.
But there was a moment when you were being, and to say a victim is victimized.
Yeah.
Abused, you know?
Yes.
And we have so much talk in the industry about, should we still use the word victim? Should we still use the word rescue? Should we still use the word therapy? I mean, it's a lot of stuff swirling around. But in that moment of abuse, did pain freeze you? Or did pain become a driver to say, no, I'm going to fight?
For me, the pain was debilitating.
Okay.
For me, the pain was crippling.
Yeah.
On so many levels.
Yeah.
And I, you know, from that point, you know, your body, I always say, when we talk about the prevention trainings and warning signs and what to look for in children and youth, I always say your body is going to tell you something's wrong, even if you haven't said a word.
Yep.
You the
signs are there.
Will start. There's manifestations of trauma. Yeah,
absolutely.
So yeah, I had all the things, all the typical diagnosis that you can get with anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation. And so for years, because mine did last more than once, and for several years, And there's that fear component and the intimidation component that, you know, perpetrators know what to say. They know how to keep you silent. They know how to, you know, traumatize you so that you will not tell. And then you start to believe over time. I listened to those lies that, you know, shame whispered to my soul that, you know, maybe I was the crazy one. Maybe this was my fault. Yeah. Maybe I did something to bring this on, and maybe this was my fault. So as we talk about layers, a lot of people talk about shame, right? And how shame is a silent killer. I take it a step further and I say, you know, you could probably get by in life with shame. If you have shame, you can probably still be somewhat successful. You can go to work, you can have a decent life. But when shame turns to condemnation,
yeah,
now you're in the enemy's playground.
If Satan can convince you to condemn yourself.
Yes.
I mean, you're so far removed from God's voice at that point.
Yes.
That, and I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Self-condemnation. Yeah. And unfortunately, we're finding that a lot even in the faith community.
Yes.
There's a lack of a relationship with God. They believe, but they can't get to a relationship because they don't see themselves worthy because it's self-condemnation. They've condemned, and which is really Satan's ploy.
It is.
In the healing process, and it's a process. I mean, it is a process. Did you experience certain things that surprised you that would trigger memory that was suppressed or would trigger situations? Was there anything like that for you? How did suppressed pain in memory come back? Was it in therapy or was it triggered by certain events?
You know, it's so complex for something like this. I would probably say all the above because you have years of suppression and you don't realize that a certain song can be a trigger or a certain someone's face that's familiar to somebody else's face or, you know, different things, movie scenes where there's, you know, violence directed towards women. Just things that you would never think of that are just around in our society, things that nobody can help. It's just a trigger. And so, yeah, over time, through my healing process, I have seen in my own life and in counseling with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of survivors, it's just kind of one of those things where like, oh, I didn't know that was there. I didn't know this was a trigger, you know. But I think that self-awareness and honesty, you know, when we look at, I do trainings on addressing the spiritual impact of sexual abuse. And the first step is honesty versus denial. Because you and I both know people, unfortunately, that have continued to live their lives and they've never addressed it because the truth is painful.
Very.
It's very painful.
But the only way to healing is through pain.
You
got to go through it though.
Yeah. And you even look at, you know, the redemption that lives in the gospel. I mean, Christianity in and of itself was born in trauma. And the trauma that Christ fulfilled at the cross.
Persecuted. And I ask you that because I'm in my, you know, I'm working through something at the moment. And this is kind of a working, you know, I'm constantly looking at how is Satan moving in hurting and harming people and how he operates with, because look, he's predictable. He can't create. There's no imagination. So we can read his playbook. So I asked you that question for this reason. Bear with me for a second. As a prevention tool or an awareness tool, and hear me, there's so many people who've experienced trauma that have never labeled it as trauma, that never have accepted that what they went through was trauma.
Yeah.
But they can maybe relate to something like, when I'm in a room by myself and suddenly it goes dark, it scares the dickens out of me.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never asked why. It's a trigger. And to then say, is there a moment in your past, you know, that we can, so can the trigger actually indicate that, hey, there's suppressed trauma that you haven't dealt with? So it's kind of the reverse, discovering trauma and then start healing. And then you're discovering triggers as you go along and say, oh, I didn't know I had that. Now let's deal with that.
Yeah.
For those that go, you know what? I don't think I've ever had abuse. And I start asking them questions, you know, nightmares, night terrors, you know, things like when people tell me I can't walk in crowds. I don't like a lot of people, or I need to be around a lot of people. I don't like one-on-one settings. I can't be by myself. I can't be alone, you know. And if someone tells I can't be, then I start asking these questions and then start diving into say, have you ever thought why that is? Well, it's just how I am. No, not normal. It probably was a coping mechanism, or it's probably a fight or flight response. So I like to reverse engineer things like that, because so many people actually remember some of the trauma they had gone through, and the depth and the level, because God's made us so special that in the moment we can't suppress. We can, I mean, it's unbelievable. The human being is an unbelievable.
It's a, the creation. Mind is so beautiful, and yes. We still know so little about it,
yeah.
Right?
Can't suppress, but then it will always surface at some point. Yes. It's going to show. And you were saying the body shows signs.
Yes, it does.
People break out on hives. I've just always broken out on hives. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the doctor and get, you know, a steroid. No, let's not. Let's ask spiritual questions.
Yes. Yes.
Let's ask, hey, when does that happen? Mm-hmm. You know, how did you feel when that happened? What were your thoughts when that happened? Who talked to you?
Yeah.
And then I find out, oh, every time her uncle talks to her or is at a party, she breaks out in hives. And then later we discovered, when she was 4, uncle came into her room.
Yeah.
And she actually didn't quite remember all the details. And now she does, but she's just breaking out in hives. You see what I'm saying? So the body talks.
Yes, it does.
I think we can reverse it sometimes and say, okay, here's the evident condition. Mm-hmm. Now let's reverse engineer, go ask questions. And not just run to the doctor and get medication, but let's ask emotional and spiritual questions about, hey, God, Holy Spirit, show us what's going on here.
Yes.
And so I think we miss a lot in the American medical society of just medicating stuff.
Yes.
When the body is actually saying, hey, trauma, physical trauma, sickness, illness, disease, or emotional and spiritual trauma manifests physically.
Yes.
I think.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. There are almost, for any physical thing that you see, there are spiritual roots to that. There's different manifestations, you know, from that, from the trauma, from the evil, from the wickedness. And, you know, what I love in my, you know, relationship, and, you know, we always go, you know, you asked if I was healthy, and people say, are you really healed? Are you really doing that well? You know, I take no medication. I used to take, you know, medication for anxiety, you know, sleeping, post-traumatic stress, but I'm free. I'm truly free. But what I love about, you know, the growth that I have had in my relationship with the Lord is that He'll never reveal something to you just so that you can have pain.
That's
He
right.
reveals it to show you what you need to defeat. Mm-hmm. You know, He'll reveal it to show
and at
you.
The right time.
Yes, at the right time.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is something that you can overcome and will be overcome. But we have to face it. And that's the hard part, is facing it and, you know, wrestling. And I love, you know, if you go back and you see the story of Jacob and how Jacob wrestled with the Lord, it says Jacob wrestled with God and won. He won. Mm-hmm. You can wrestle with God and win, but the problem is because of condemnation.
And there's so many. There's so,
people don't feel they can wrestle.
Absolutely. They don't. Society.
You must wrestle. You must.
You must fight.
Yeah.
You must wrestle. And it's not just Jacob. And I had incredible wrestle. July 16, 2009, 2 o'clock in the morning, 6-hour wrestle with God. Physically almost lost my life. But I mean, Moses go to God and God said, I'm going to destroy this whole nation. And he said, well, hold on 1 second. What if there's 100? Just 100 out of all of Israel that believes. Well, okay, then I'll spare the nation. Okay, but what if there's 10?
Yeah.
This is a wrestle. This is a negotiation. This is not like, oh, I'm changing God's mind. No, it's you going to the Father saying, well, hold on now. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Let's wrestle through this. You're making me feel these feelings, and these thoughts are coming up.
Yeah.
And so often it happens when survivors, seldomly survivors become mothers, but when they do, I find that stuff just comes up. in that process of becoming a mother, and I don't know if it was that way for you, and you guys have one little one, but in the process of becoming a mother and birth, man, I'm telling you, if we know that there's a survivor that's going to give birth, we almost anticipate that, oh, things are, get ready. Things are going to come up that she never even knew she walked through and experienced, because there's just something about giving life and God wanting to continue to give life. So I don't know, did you, your pregnancy period, that term, the 9 months, 40 weeks, 38 weeks, I don't know. What was it, by the way? When was little one born?
She came a little early.
Okay. So how early?
She was almost an entire month early. She was almost a preemie. Like by one day she missed it.
Wow.
So she surprised us. Yeah.
Okay. But in that process of pregnancy and then soon after, right? Emotionally, how did you deal? Did you feel anything different or no?
You know, she came in, it was a little traumatic. I had an emergency C-section, so it was just everything's fine 1 minute, and the next minute, you know, we were going in. So it just all happened so quickly. Yeah. And I think that the way she came, it was distracting. But you know, I am very grateful. The Lord has been so good. And I knew Ava. I received two prophecies about her life the year. So my husband and I have been married. We've been married now for 10 years, but we were married for 7, no children.
Same here. We were married 7 years, no kids.
Oh, my goodness.
And we tried to conceive. It wasn't that we didn't try for 7 years.
Right.
God just didn't. It wasn't his will.
And there are so many revelations there too we could talk about. But
things he needed to do first in our lives.
Yeah. That's it. 100%. My healing.
Tremendous
my
healing.
Walking, everything. Yeah. Yes. And it was the year before. And it's interesting. Nobody really said anything to us about that. I had two strangers. I had gone to speak in Missouri, and there was a lady there, and there was another lady. So they're two women that do not know each other at all.
Yeah.
Both prophesied that the Lord would make me fruitful within the year, and said some other things too as well. But that resonated with my spirit. And I said, this sounds really right. Even though for 7 years, no prophecy, nobody asking questions, nobody just, you know. And the year before we conceived, two prophecies, the next year I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
And nothing for 7 years. So, you know, I needed that though. You know, that was so good for my heart.
And it speaks to God's timing, right?
Yeah.
You needed that time.
Yeah.
The process for you of trusting a man again. What was your relationship with your dad, your biological dad?
I have a wonderful dad.
Even through and after the abuse, and then of course your dad supported you in telling your story.
Yeah.
You shared it with me off camera when the reporter came to the home, and God basically said, Jenny, if you're going to ask others to speak up, you got to speak up with your name. So your dad was supportive through all that.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. He's a wonderful man, always been involved, dinners, you know, together every night, came to all of our basketball practices and volleyball practices. And so there's three of us. I have two sisters, so I'm the middle daughter, and we're all very close. But yeah, my dad is a good man, and I have a good relationship with him. And, you know, he was groomed too. You know, I always tell caregivers that, the children and youth are not the only ones groomed. Mm-hmm. Generally, the adults around the children and youth are always groomed.
100%.
Because you would never let your child be around someone that you didn't trust, right? They still have to gain that trust.
That's why people say, well, yeah. If I'm a parent, I would see. No one wants to talk about if your child is targeted, you would be groomed as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you are.
And you are.
Like we were raised without a father. I was 18. My brother and sister are 5 and 6 years younger than me. So there's a huge gap. We were actually never in the same schools. And they were grooming us. They were preparing us and my mom. And it was a year of positioning the family.
Yeah.
Right, to then go in and strike. And that's always the case. I mean, it's a very complex but very efficient way of working with people. I ask myself sometimes, if we are as patient with the gospel, and presenting the gospel to somebody and walking with somebody that's not a believer and slowly introducing truth in love and kindness and earning trust, we'd probably be more effective. Yeah. You know, we like to, as Christians, have this McDonald's drive-through Christianity. Just pop in the drive-through real quick, accept Jesus, and off you go. And it's just not, it doesn't stick.
Yeah.
It's not how it works. And so,
it's not how it works.
Talk to me a little bit about pure in heart. And Becca, can I ask you to pull up Jenna's website? And Dan, maybe we go to, when that's up, we go to that camera. Pure in heart. At some point, you feel like, okay, I got to write this memoir. How did that come about? And this is the book, Pure in Heart. I want to encourage everybody to get Pure in Heart. Can they get this on the website?
You can get it anywhere books are sold. So yeah, okay. My website, Amazon, Jenna, Barnes & Noble.
Jenna Quinn, Pure in Heart. Tell me about a memoir of overcoming abuse and passing Jenna's Law, which we will get to. Jenna's
Law.
Yeah,
sure. So this book was really a labor of love. And a lot of the common questions that I get about my life, about the healing process. And people ask a lot of questions about, you know, what's it like to go to court? What's it like to sit just a few feet away from your offender and you have to share every single detail of the things that happened in secret? And you've got, you know, in my case, a jury room of strangers.
And now it's public record.
And everybody. So there's just a lot of questions that people have, survivors that are all in different places in their walk, whether it's their legal battle or their, you know, healing process, or for families, parents want to know, is my kid going to be traumatized if my child goes to court and has to testify? And, you know, there's just a lot of questions. So just taking all of my experience and, you know, the way things happened in my life, sharing my story. My story is, it's interesting because, yes, it's my story and it's what God's done in my life, but it's not unique because I hear it time and time and time again. And you know this, a lot
or
of children and youth.
Lot of elements of it, yeah.
So many elements of it are textbook, and it's like, I've heard that before,
Because it's a tactic.
It's a tactic, and it's nothing new. It's the same wickedness that's like, not surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many times, as you know, a lot of children and youth that are trafficked, not all the time, but many times, were first sexually abused at an early age at some point, which is what caused them to maybe run away from home or, you know, live out on the street for some period of time not really understand their self-worth. So they get picked up, you know, again, because it happened.
Yeah, for that matter, the abusers, most of the abusers were abused.
Yeah.
As children, you know, and so a lot of work we're doing in that psychosis, in the decision when abuse happens, the decisions we make, the root lies we form, and a lot of those perpetrators, the person that abused you is still incarcerated, correct?
Yes,
today.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. What term is left for that person? Do you know?
I think really only just a few years at this point. But he was 65 when he was sentenced to prison. So, he'll be very old by the time he does get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't see enough sentencing.
We don't see enough. The national conviction rate is around 10%, and there's a lot more work that needs to be done, and there's a lot of different ways to help change that.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, if we can touch on law a little bit, when Jenna's Law came out, it came to my attention immediately, right away, and it's been years, and we only meet now, but that's also God's design, and I'm very thankful for Suzanne and connecting us. Talk us just through Jenna's Law just a little bit, and I think... Yeah, there you go. Becca's got it on the screen as well. But just the whole process of a survivor now needing services, support, help. Now you come in, it takes finance and it takes, you know, logistics and people that know, and hopefully there's someone in that community. So the child doesn't have to be further displaced. There's times when we have to take a child from Texas to Tennessee. Or from Nevada to Texas to get help. I mean, it's difficult. And that's further trauma because now the child's completely displaced from everything. So just give us the just, I mean, I know, but for the listener of Jenna's Law.
Sure. So Jenna's Law was really born from, you know, my own experience as a student, not having opportunities to tell in any of my safe places. So, you know, the generation before me, my parents' generation, you know, they didn't have conversations like this. And it wasn't their fault. It's just there was no awareness about it.
Yeah.
So my parents didn't have any body safety conversation with me. My school didn't provide those opportunities. My church didn't provide those opportunities. So I concluded, well, this must be something that's better left unspoken then. And that's the message that we send to our children and youth when we aren't the first ones as safe people to open that door of communication for them and say, you know, even if you look at it biblically, it's like God is not silent on this issue. So we could take a theological approach, if you want to take that approach too, and say, like, look, listen, this is okay to talk about. Even if you're in a situation you're unsure of, maybe you're uncomfortable, it's okay to say something about that. You know, don't stuff that. Don't hide that. So from my own experience as a student and my mom's experience, so something that some people may or may not know is that my mom was a teacher at the private school that I went to. So talk about a really safe life, right?
Like, and I know the school.
You're a teacher's kid.
It is a really good school too. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and you're a teacher's kid at this school. Yeah. So, you know, all eyes are on you all the time.
And we have that in common as well. My mom taught at my high school. She taught my sister. I mean, it's funny.
Yeah.
A lot in common.
I think it's great. But she had taught in public and private for many years. And as a veteran teacher, 20 years teaching experience at this point, she never learned, you know, they're mandatory reporters, but there was not really effective training on specifically sexual abuse indicators, right? Like before it was more physical abuse and neglect, like look for bruises on children or look if they haven't showered or eaten and have been neglected. But when we're talking about something like any type of sexual abuse in any form, a lot of those warning signs are emotional. They are behavioral and they're displayed that way. That's how they manifest themselves. So sudden changes in behavior and things like that. So, you know, my teachers, my parents, everybody was trying to figure out what was wrong with me. Like, hey, I went to the emergency room because hives broke out all over my body and I'm failing my classes and my teachers or everybody's scratching their heads going, what's wrong with this young girl? Like, we can't figure out what's wrong with her. And my parents spent a lot of money taking me to doctors to try to find a physiological reason for what was wrong. Yeah. So my thyroid was tested, you know, they tested to see if I was anemic and I was tested for learning disabilities. It's like, so you're going through all these additional testing, but still nobody can really figure out what's wrong. And that's re-traumatizing too. You
100%.
Know? It's like, go take this test. Oh, what's wrong with you here? What's wrong? All my tests were negative though.
Well, it's failure upon failure because every time they're looking for an answer and they're not finding it, it's like, oh, we failed at finding the answer with this, with that. And you become a test subject at that point.
Yes. And that feels just really great. You know, it's like, guys, please. It's really hard to tell. Like, that's how hard it is to tell when you've got people poking around and it's like, you know, that shame is so deep that you still feel like I can't say anything to anybody. Mm-hmm. All these professionals, you know, still don't feel like you can tell them, even though they're there to help, right? Find some way to help. So all that to say, I went to have my SANE exam, my sexual assault nurse exam, and my mom took me and I'm getting my exam and she's very nervous. She's looking for reading material in the lobby to just pass the time, right? And so she gets this tiny little pamphlet, this little bullet points here, and she's reading it and it says warning signs a child may display if they've been sexually abused. And she gets out a pen from her purse and it's like, I was all summed up on one little page of bullet points and she couldn't believe it. For all these years, if she had just seen this or seen it sooner, she could have stopped it from happening or at least stopped it from happening for as long as it went on. She would have known to consider because no parent wants to consider that that's what's happening.
Well, they don't. And this is the problem. When we talk about sex trafficking, parents, a lot of them, their minds, and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, their minds shut off because the brain naturally does not want to believe.
Right.
That evil could be in your midst. And my notice to America is It is.
Yes.
It's in your midst.
Yeah.
It's in your church, in your child's school, it's in your neighborhood. It is.
It is.
Yeah. Now let's go find out, is it present in your home? And let's go ask proactive questions and read the signs and consider that, hey, for 15 years we called it bullying, you know, and maybe the bully is bullying at school but being sexually abused at home.
Yes.
And it's his way of taking power back in the classroom.
Right.
So let's start asking some different questions, you know, to your point. Yeah.
100%. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And people, you know, of course there's discomfort in saying, hey, like, this is the reality, this is the prevalence, this is what's happening. And, you know, not to get sidetracked, but people always have that like sort of disbelief on their face. Like, I don't really think that that's really happening.
They don't want
but
to.
But it is. Yeah.
Exactly.
But we're not to be unaware of the enemy's schemes.
Exactly.
We're not to be unaware.
I've had people tell me to my face, I don't want to know because if I know, I'm going to have to do something about it. And I go, and that's the point. God wants you to know, which is Ezekiel 33:7. We are to mourn. And so how in pure at heart, how comprehensive, what timeline do you go through in pure of heart? Is it a
So the timeline is really just... I talk about my home life. I had come from a good family, teacher's kid, you know, grew up a typical, I guess, Texan in North Dallas. We had some horses. So, you know, there's a little bit of backstory as far as my life and, you know, my family. And it really just takes you through. You see how something like this can happen and how quickly it can happen and why it's so difficult for survivors to tell. Here's why it's hard. Here are things that can help with disclosures, the right questions to ask, you know, making it as comfortable as possible for them. So it really goes through my entire, all of the story.
Yeah.
And even through the court process, my victim impact statement is in there. I get a lot of questions.
Chapter 22. I mean, you get into what I like about it is you get into some details like, hey, I sat in the courtroom. This is where I sat. This is who sat across from me. You know, I think sometimes that's why movies are so powerful.
Yeah.
Books are powerful. And also people read a book and then they're disappointed at the movie because the book contains more information. But allowing people to visualize the environment, I think can break walls and barriers because they go, I've experienced that.
Yes.
But it takes somebody to speak.
Yeah.
I think a lost art in the gospel and in the church today is testimony.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Yes.
Testimony. By the word of your testimony.
Yes.
Well, does that mean just about healing? No. Testimony of abuse. Well, why is that important? For the one who's being abused that doesn't know that it's not okay.
Yes.
Or who's afraid to speak that believes and was told that if you speak, they won't believe you.
Yeah.
They'll believe me. You're going to be in trouble. My sister in a documentary recently said, and I've heard her testimony so many times, and still I learn a lot from Ilanka's testimony. And she said, I realized that, in fact, I was not going to be the one that was going to be in trouble, but this man that abused me as a 12-year-old was going to be in trouble. Something as little as that. And people would go, well, that's obvious. No, it's not.
No, it's not, because you assume the blame. Survivors assume the
blame. And that's also post-grooming.
Yeah.
Post-indoctrination, post-physical, emotional, spiritual trauma.
Yeah.
Now go make a healthy decision. It's very difficult.
Yes, exactly.
Very difficult. It's easy from the bleachers to say, hey, the quarterback should throw this route.
Yes.
Get on the field, get smashed in the mouth a couple times, and then things change a little bit.
Yeah.
So by the word of testimony, other people get the courage, the boldness, the license.
Yeah.
You know how many people told me that I finally got a license to tell my story? And you would say, well, you've always had the license. No, it's not how the survivor, the process just doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
You know, and then when we get to men, it's infinitely more difficult. Not to pin women against men, but there's another little element in men that are not in women. And that is a man is born to be a protector. And when the one that's born to be a protector is violated, it's very, very hard for men to acknowledge that another guy stole my innocence.
Yeah.
Another guy, even when I find that when I was 12, a woman locked me in a room. I was at a party with my dad. A woman locked me in a room, took her clothes off, and told me in detail what she was going to teach me. I climbed through the window, I literally escaped and got away, right? Even men that were abused by women, boys by women, it's a different response. Mm-hmm. We find that they are more likely to talk, to tell. But when it's a man abusing a boy, there is so little reporting.
Yeah, they are the fewest, the lowest amounts of reporting are in those specific
incidences.
Because
there's a manhood, something breaks where I'm supposed to. Even if you go, well, you're a five-year-old boy, you're not supposed to be fending off a man.
Right.
There's something inside that boy that's just, and it's so destructive. And so I always say, look, we say 95% women, 5% men. The men, the boys and men number is highly underreported.
So we don't really know.
And even women are highly underreported. But with boys, it's very difficult to get a guy, a man in his 40s, to come out and say, you know what? I'm dealing with anger issues, et cetera, et cetera. I'm on divorce number 2 and 3 because I really don't trust anybody, because I've traced it back to the root lie that when I was raped by a man at 5, they just don't talk about it.
Yeah, no, they don't.
And it's sad because they can be liberated from it. And
absolutely,
Jesus can heal that. And,
yeah,
and they can change their legacy and their future. So for the men listening, as difficult as it is, as unthinkable as it is to go tell that story, they must. We must support boys as well to come out and tell these stories.
Oh, absolutely. And that is, I mean, there's healing available to you, for you. Mm-hmm. And that's never too late. You know, I've talked with male survivors that are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, mm-hmm, 80s. And it's liberating for them to say, I find strength now because of a testimony, because courage is contagious.
And so
when you have the courage to say, this is the truth about how bad it was, this is how I walked it out, and this is where I am now, and it's available for you too, and it's not too late, even if you're 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 100, it's available for you.
My wife's grandfather, who I will see this weekend, who's now deep in his 90s, received healing at 88 years old. Not physical healing, emotional, spiritual trauma. Because he finally got to a point where he just said, I'm ready.
Praise
and
God.
Spoke.
Yeah.
So there's never a moment when it's too late. And his came through. Courage is infectious. And if you think of what's happened since 2020 in this country, we frown upon courage. They don't want people to speak.
Right.
Because it is infectious. You can actually make a whole nation rise up if you say, look,
it's
painful.
Yeah.
We've made mistakes in history, whether it's physical trauma or a nation or bad decisions as a country. The history is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to change it. Deal with it. The good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent.
Yeah.
Learn from it. But it's going to be painful. Yes, it is. Walk through it. We'll be stronger. And there's liberation.
Yes.
At the end of
this. There's a reward.
There's a reward at the end of this tunnel.
Yeah.
This is not the, you know, golden chest, the end of the rainbow that doesn't exist. There's an actual real reward.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't, and it's just a part of your life that's dead. And it's like dead men walking and dead women walking. How do we get people to support you? What are you busy with? Where's Jenna's Law going? Can you tell us that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I had started to.
Yeah.
So this is why. So out of my own experience as a student and out of my mom's experience as an educator, not having, you know, the opportunities to tell, the idea for Jenna's Law was born. So in 2009, our Senator Tan Parker, who's newly elected senator, championed Jenna's Law, and former Governor Perry signed it. Now we have 27 states that have followed suit and adopted prevention legislation as well. And now we have federal legislation called the Jenna Quinn Law. And there's still so much more to say about the process of Jenna's Law and all the supernatural things that happen through that and for this federal legislation as well. But now we have had the Jenna Quinn Law federally that has been filed twice. Our United States Senate has passed it 100-0.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah.
But we have a problem.
In the House.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
now we got the House back.
There we go.
Hallelujah. 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
We got the house back. And this is where I'll go straight up, and it's not you. And I'll go Kevin McCarthy and these boys in the house. There are bills like this, like the Jenna Quinn law, other bills that we have had, bills we worked on under President Trump and before him even, under President Bush, Obama, currently under Biden. There are things that get stuck in the House or get stuck in the Senate that is about life and protecting the innocent children. These things cannot get stuck.
No, they can't.
So this is an opportunity for the House, the U.S. House of Representatives, to go do your job respectfully and pass a bill that passed in the Senate 100-0. That is
twice
fully bipartisan and get blocked in the House. And so when it passed in the Senate, still it doesn't matter. It was 100-0, but that was under a Republican Senate, right?
Yeah. So we have our Texas senior senator, John Cornyn.
Yeah.
And the co-sponsor was Senator Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire.
Yes.
So a Democrat co-sponsor, mm-hmm. Republican co-sponsor. And this is completely bipartisan. So what the Jenna Quinn law will do federally is not only promote these prevention trainings that you do, that I do for all forms of child sexual abuse, it is also going to make available funding from the Department of Health and Human Services.
Which
because
is
the
huge.
Biggest issue is, well, we don't
funding.
Have resources. Yeah. Or school, but the funding is not just for schools. A lot of the focuses have been on schools lately. This is for nonprofits, for ministries,
for the victim services providers, the trauma-informed therapists and the counselors. And it still takes money. And this notion in this country, it's the weirdest thing ever. And it normally comes from Christians. They go, well, if it's faith-based, it should be free. Time out. Hold on 1 second. So if the gas station is owned by Christians, do you get the gas free?
Yeah.
It's preposterous. If the doctor's a Christian, does he perform the operation free?
Yeah.
No. These therapists still need to get paid, and there's still the lights need to be on, and there's facilities, et cetera. So federal funding for this, we send federal funding to protecting the bats in Austin.
Yeah.
That's no joke.
I know.
All right? Or some...
When you think of where some of the funding has gone...
It's insane.
You're saying, what about... Children
Look,
and
I'm
youth
not,
that
I'm not anti-bat, but trust me, I pick a child out of a bat Monday to Sunday. I mean, but we don't. Yeah. We ran a study. We ran a test. Actually, it was a GoFundMe campaign in 2009.
Yeah.
And there's a bat population in Austin, Texas that lives under the main bridge. So we raised funds to preserve the bats, and we raised funds to preserve children from sex trafficking. The bats won. They raise more money, and
the
so
bats.
It's the bats.
The bats.
I couldn't care less, right?
I can't.
So
yeah, but I'm not shocked either. I'm like, well.
But it speaks to human nature, and so many people just don't want to touch this. So yes, this will open up funding, and it's not just reparations. We're just talking about funding, access to therapy, access to help, access to healing. And I'm thankful that it's not just schools.
Right.
Because that's training, but it needs to be in the community that actually helps to rebuild a life.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the groups that are doing that are ministries, are the nonprofits that are doing the counseling and the services and the shelters and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need a lot of help because they're the ones that are actually doing the work, providing the
advocates.
Services. Yes.
I mean, just people don't even know these advocates. Amazing. Traffic 911 in Dallas that just walks with a survivor.
Yes.
Just stays there. It's kind of like a big brother, big sister program. Very, very, very important work.
Yeah.
So, and it costs money.
It all costs money.
So there's no reason for this to be blocked in this house. None. If I can help there, let me know. I mean, I will go crack a whip. I mean, I'm telling you, that's easy.
That's good.
To do.
We'll craft glocks of whips because I
that's
think we'll
easy
need
to do.
It. Yeah,
no. Like I just said, McCarthy, step up straight away. Let's just go to Kevin, go to the top. If he's going to be speaker or whoever else, this needs to go. This needs to happen. And many more like it. And we just passed a bill in Oklahoma that we wrote to remove pornography from all curriculum, and because porn is a feeder drug.
It
absolutely is part of the grooming mechanisms, 100%.
Yes, come to find out, my offender, as the police, the detectives were doing their work, they found a lot of pornography in my perpetrator's home.
Jenna, I've never met a single pedophile, pimp, or buyer, a John, okay, of sex with children that were not porn addicts.
Right.
Never.
The correlation is like 100%.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So these bills got to go. We're touring that bill at the moment across the states. And unfortunately, we're in a culture today where people have been told that you shouldn't speak, your voice doesn't matter if you don't do groupthink. And it's been detrimental to the survivor community. It's been very, very detrimental. The last 2 years has been some of the toughest years for me to witness and experience in when you finally rescue a life. Mm-hmm. When you finally get someone to ask for help, when you finally get someone out of the life, and then culture tells them, don't want to hear your story. Yeah. You cannot break rank, or no, sex with children should be normalized. Mm-hmm. We should have gender fluidity.
Yeah.
You know,
let's change the name to it. Let's make it minor attracted persons.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Because what people never talk about, it's just a newsflash. So here's a girl. Let's just call her Susie. Susie's 16. Susie's uncle's come into her room, and then she started being trafficked to neighbors and maybe a teacher or whatever. Susie's not going to talk about this to anybody. She believes it's her fault.
Yeah.
She's already in the condemnation phase. Mm-hmm. She sees a headline. Oh, you know what? They're not pedophiles. They're minor attracted persons, and they have the right to do this.
It's an orientation.
What do you think that does to Susie? How much confidence does that give her to now go, you know what? The coast is clear for me to ask for help. No, she's told, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You don't have a voice. No one will listen to you. As a matter of fact, we're about to change the law.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch Gavin Newsom strike the sex offender registry, every person that's just thinking about talking about abuse goes, maybe not.
Yep.
That's what happens behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It's detrimental. It's reckless. Absolutely reckless with the community that's already being abused.
Yeah.
Right? That's just walking among us every single day. So we're talking about 1 in 3 American women now, 1 in 5 men. I mean, these numbers are insane.
They are, but they're real.
Very real.
So real. And when you start to talk about it, when you do start to open up and talk about even just a little bit, or the elevator speech, well, what do you do? And then it's like, oh, well, my nephew or my niece or my sister or my cousin or my grandfather, or everybody knows somebody. If it wasn't them, they know someone.
We went for years. Obviously, my sister, Ilonka, went through it. So that's close. That's like, I mean, I was basically dad. But for years, I'd say for decades, it was always, you know, we dealt with so many cases. Recently, Jenna, I cannot tell you, probably 5, maybe 7 friends.
Yeah.
That we know intimately. Friends, it's now in their homes. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It has completely permeated culture and society.
It has. And the whole peer-to-peer abuse has increased as well. And that's about a third of child sex. When you look at all the forms of child sex, that's about a third of it. Why? Because of our culture, because of our society. It has infiltrated the minds of young. I mean, the average age for young boy exposure to pornography is age 9.
Yeah. We actually have it down at 8 at the moment. But I would like to talk to you. You know, our documentary coming out January 19th for everybody. Sex Nation will release, and it is a riveting 3.5 year in the making documentary. I think I'd love to have a different conversation with you about that and see if we can't include and give your story more length, you know, through the website and the things we're going to do to bring more exposure to Jenna's law, but also just your story for your voice to encourage others. So I'd love to see if that's something you'd be interested in. But we take a 75-year look at just how did we get here. We start in 1935 and we come all the way. And so there's a reason this happens. It is something that is so nefarious, and it's so easy to hide.
Yes,
it's not hard.
And it's accessible to anyone, anywhere. Yeah. If you've got an iPhone, if you have access to the internet, anywhere.
It's game over. Yeah. And even prior to this, I mean, it was prevalent, but we just
jet fuel. But you had fuel. To go to the DVD store. Yeah.
Jet fuel. And then COVID happened and kids were locked down and even more. And now that trend is not, that tide hasn't turned. It's like but for God, it would have been a runaway train. But there is hope and redemption. And so
there is.
Real quick, social media. What is your social? Do you use social?
I do. I use, I have all the platforms. Instagram is Jenna Quinn Love. Facebook is Jenna Quinn, Jenna's Law. And Twitter is Jenna's Law.
Okay.
And
we'll throw those on the screen. We'll get Rebecca to throw it on the screen. Your website will be on the screen. You're amazing. It is fantastic to sit across a survivor that's not just a survivor, but a survivor that can answer the first question I asked you today is how healthy are you? And the answer is the potential is body, mind, soul, spirit. That's what's out there for people. So for those listening, you have access to that.
You do.
There's
you
potential do. For that. He died on the cross for that, for nothing less.
For nothing less.
Nothing less.
We go from faith to faith and from glory to glory, and you can never stop continuing to have joy and have hope and have all the things that the Lord has promised to his children.
Yeah. Jenna, you're fantastic. You're amazing. Your spirit is so pure, and it's really good to have you out there as a voice. Keep sharing your testimony. Come back. And let's see if we can't have more conversation and do more together. God bless you.
And thank you for everything you're doing as well. You're on the front lines out there fighting, and we need your voice. We need more of it. We really do.
We're doubling down.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Talk to you guys next time. Thanks.